Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Luke, the force is strong with you.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke Bryan!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Welcome, everyone, to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. I'm your host, Luke Mathers. Brian is out this week. He's enjoying some sunny, shiny rays in Disneyland, the happiest place on Earth, and I believe just giving Governor Ron DeSantis the bird everywhere he goes, because that's what you do at Disney now? I don't know exactly. We'll have to check in with him once he gets back from his vacation, but I am joined this afternoon by my friend Jesse. Jesse, how you doing this afternoon, man?
I'm back. You can't get rid of me.
I can't. Well, I can when somebody decides to, you know, cause a little minor motor vehicle accident, because you and I were scheduled to be on the airwaves together last week, but unfortunately wasn't able to make it on that show myself, so we had to pull the replay, but we have you on now.
I'm a patient man.
You are a patient man. I'm very glad that you're able to join me this afternoon, because we got a number of headlines that we're going to get into. We got some Marquette University Law School polling that has dropped this afternoon. We got an update about a CAFO going on in northeastern Wisconsin, and a number of other headlines as well here in Wisconsin. But I wanted to first kick off an opinion piece with you, Jesse, because it was what we wanted to talk about last week, but we didn't quite get to it because of that unforeseen incident that kept me off the air last Tuesday. So I want to dive into this piece, Jesse, because, yeah, notes a little bit about who is on your shirt. And exactly. You want to, and this is a audio medium as well,
yes,
Jesse.
I'm aware,
so you want to
I'm
share
wearing, I was just giving a little, Easter egg for those who are watching over the internet. I'm wearing my Elizabeth Warren Has a Plan shirt from,
yes,
from my time leading the volunteer corps of the state of Wisconsin for Warren.
Yes. And so last week, Senator Elizabeth Warren had an opinion piece in the New York Times, and that's what we were planning on talking about. So, you know, we're going to stick to those plans, Jesse. We're going to still talk about this a little bit because I think it's still relevant, especially with the polling that is out here in Wisconsin today, a battleground state for the 2022 fall elections as well. And it's still a relevant opinion piece. So we're going to dive into it.
Very much so, because it's, you know, it's talking about what should we be doing between here and November. So that's going to be relevant to every day for the, you know, the next 7 months or so, six months. 6 months,
yeah,
and some days.
Yeah, 6 months and a little change. It's flying by, man. It's already the end of April. Next week is May. So, and you and yourself are going to see the mouse next week. Is that true?
Yep. Me and the family are going to go down this weekend. We'll be there for a week, so maybe I'll run into Brian if he's not, you know, trying to avoid me.
We'll have to see if your ship's in the night or if you guys get to, you know, go run around Star Wars land or whatever the new exhibit is down there. Yeah, I told him he's got to yell for me, Han shot first, if he was there. So... but this opinion piece over at the New York Times, Jesse, I've alluded to it. It's a guest essay in the opinion column over at the New York Times. Elizabeth Warren, Democrats can avoid disaster in November. And as you alluded to, Jesse, you're a fan of Elizabeth Warren. You're wearing a Elizabeth Warren t-shirt.
I was lucky enough to be a part of the team and lead the team that led volunteer operations across the state. And I got to say, it was an impressive machine. There was, you know, 100 volunteer organizers and 1,000 volunteers under them, you know, just attending, not putting on events across the state. You know, the October before the primary, we had an event in, you know, all across the state, at least one every single day, all month long. And it was kind of an impressive thing to see. I'm sad that we didn't get a chance to take it out for a test drive.
Yeah, the pandemic struck, and there was a lot of different other unforeseen incidents when that happened as well. But folks, you're listening to this conversation on Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM here in Madison, as well as the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM out of Waukesha. And Jesse, let's dive into this piece because there's some important pieces that I want to get to before we dive into the rest of the Wisconsin headlines, because here on Dueling Tangents, we know it's all relative and we like to relate some of these big national conversations, like the senator from Massachusetts is discussing in this opinion piece, to some of the stories that are going on here in Wisconsin.
She does what she does best here in this op-ed. She breaks it down to what hits people in the pocketbook all across the country and what, you know, what really tugs at their values, right? I mean, this is, you know, her proposals are saying, look, first off, the big, you know, Build Back Better plan was very ambitious. The infrastructure plan, even at the bigger one, very ambitious. But from, I don't think it's in the piece, but from it, her talking about in other places is that we should break this down into individual bills so that we can get votes on individual pieces of this agenda. Mm-hmm. And it's part of it we can get passed and deliver for the American people.
Well, at least try to, because that's the thing is I myself have problems with some of these omnibus bills that it's like you throw everything you think you only got one shot at it.
Right.
So you throw absolutely everything under the sun into these bills and they become massive. And then it's pretty easy for senators, representatives, anyone who wants to point at one thing as the quote unquote poison pill or the reason why they don't want to go along with it then, because there's so much in there that's like,
well, you also have the Mansions and Cinemas of the world saying not even against any particular thing, just amorphous criticisms like it's too big.
Yeah,
well,
just
fine.
Do
you know
less.
What?
Do
yeah,
less.
Sure. So let's do it one thing at a time and put this out there. And you know what? Get the Republicans on the record voting against individual specific pieces that, you know, 75-80% of the American populace totally agrees with. Case in point, Congress people shouldn't be able to buy and sell stocks when they have inside information. This is common sense. Almost everybody on both sides of the aisle agree with this emphatically. This is a no-brainer. This is an anti-corruption bill, plain and simple, very clean, something that every American can wrap their head around. And it's
something that still hasn't passed.
It is a lost opportunity not putting it out there as an individual piece so that, you know, when we're fighting these electoral fights in the fall, we can say, did you know your congressperson voted to be able to be an inside trader?
Yeah. No, it's definitely important votes that could be put before Congress before this fall that I absolutely agree with Senator Warren that this is something that needs to be done, because one of the parts of the piece really jumped out at me, Jesse, because this is one of the quotes from Senator Warren's opinion piece. Democrats win elections when we show we understand the painful economic realities facing American families and convince voters we will deliver meaningful change. To put it bluntly, if we fail to use the months remaining before the election to deliver on more of our agenda, Democrats are headed toward big losses in the midterms.
And that's exactly right. And one of the things that, you know, one of her fortes is as a communicator and as a salesperson for good policy, you know, she taught at every level. She taught from kindergarten, elementary, middle school, high school, all the way up to Harvard, Yale School, right? Harvard Law School. So
Harvard Yale School.
yeah, right. I'm going to get hear about that one. Sure.
Harvard Law School.
So she's able to communicate and break complex ideas down into digestible bites for people of any age and background. And that's where she slays it.
Yeah.
And she does so here.
No, absolutely. And so I think it's a very vital opinion piece, too, because if Democrats and that have the technical majority in the U.S. Senate don't do more, if say the bipartisan infrastructure bill that passed last fall is the last thing, there's a lot of time between last fall and this upcoming fall where voters that want to see these Democratic policies get passed or say be the ones sending these Democrats to office are going to be less excited if that's the only thing that gets done. Say a year goes between the bipartisan infrastructure bill that was signed by President Biden last year and nothing else, legislatively speaking, none of these other big wins that we know have support get passed with this Congress, it's going to show problems because there are people on the other side, Republicans on the other side, that are very fired up about lies that they've been telling each other, and they're amped up to vote. There's excitement from the Republican base. They already think that this is going to be a landslide election for them. They believe that it is in the cards that Republicans should be taking back one or both houses of Congress.
Right. And I think part of this is there are some, you know, very important political consultants on both sides, actually, mm-hmm. that think, okay, if you don't have the votes to pass a bill, it's foolish to put it out there at all, because if you don't get it passed, you look like a loser. And there's some truth to that. But when the things you're proposing are things that you know 70 to 80% of all Americans agree with, then that's a political winner. I call it the Obi-Wan Kenobi school of politics. Well, when you win by losing, you know, you get struck down, but then you turn into a ghost and you help Luke blow up the Death Star. You're everywhere at that point, right?
No, you get caught trying, and that's what a lot of people, I think, is an important thing. Even if you think that it's not going to work, sometimes it's still worth going for it, because you get caught trying and you show people that it is something that you care about, and it's something that you would get done if you had the ability to do it. If there was a majority surrounding you, you can show that that's what you want to do. And it's absolutely already part of the Republican playbook. Republicans did that in this quote-unquote silly session that they wrapped up in February here in the state of Wisconsin. They put out there all of the different wild things that they want to show.
That was all they
their
did.
Vote. That's all they did. They got all of these super partisan proposals passed out of the state assembly and state senate, only for them to be vetoed by Governor Tony Evers here in the state of Wisconsin, because they want to show their constituents that they're trying to get caught trying. And it's something that I think in this opinion piece, Senator Elizabeth Warren absolutely exemplifies, that Democrats, whether they can get them passed or not, need to try. Because if not, if they're not even caught trying, it's going to mean big problems this fall.
Well, there's strategic opportunity here, too, because the Republican Party doesn't stand for anything anymore. Literally, they did not vote on a platform in their 2020 convention. They mm-hmm. they officially, specifically, literally stand for nothing.
They deviated except from that platform.
Right, except for owning the libs and kneeling to Trump. And if they're going to be knee-jerk reactionary to everything we do, we could pass a bill in Congress making it illegal to drown kittens, and the Republicans will not vote for that. So let's get out there and get some campaign ads processed.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely, and outside of the campaign ads, there's an upside. They could still pass really popular, really important legislation if it works. So I absolutely believe that that is something that needs to get done. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Got my friend Jesse filling in this afternoon for Brian. Taking your phone calls, 844-967-2789. Going to dive into a number of other Wisconsin headlines going on, as well as the Marquette University Law School polling that dropped, showing how tight some of these elections are going to be this fall here in Wisconsin, Jesse. So I'm excited to dive in with that as well. This is Dueling Tangents. Give us a call. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Got my friend Jesse filling in for Brian this afternoon. Taking your phone calls, 844-967-2789. You know Jesse's here when a little Zeppelin gets played for the Black Dog. And really glad for you to be joining me this afternoon, Jesse.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here too, man.
Yeah, it's always exciting when we get the chance to talk on the air. And it's pretty shocking to think that We've got a congressman here, because this is where I want to go next. So we're talking about the things people care about and Congress trying to get caught trying, at least the Democrats in Congress, to pass some more meaningful legislation before this fall's elections. But we've also got congressmen here in the state of Wisconsin that aren't necessarily part of that coalition. They're part of a coalition that cares more, I guess, about covering up some of the things that have happened recently, and Glenn Grothman. We've got a congressman today quoted after all of the fallout of the House Minority Leader. I almost forgot Kevin's name. Kevin McCarthy. The House Minority
Leader. I try to forget
leader,
him as much as possible,
I,
too.
I honestly had a blank in my head there. I was like, I could picture his face, and I was like, what is... that's right, it's Kevin. It's Kevin. Little Kevin. But after the tapes were released, pretty much him indicating that he was going to ask in the days following January 6th for then still President Donald Trump to resign and step down after the results of January 6th.
And that call, refresh my memory, was to the entire Republican caucus?
I think it was Republican leadership, at least. I don't know if it was the entire Republican caucus or not. But
I'm curious, how many people on that phone call actually believed him when he said it? And I'll bet you the number's low.
The number's low, but there was enough people that were like, this is interesting, so I'm going to record this and save it for later and release it at a date further in time
and place of my choosing.
Yeah, exactly. And so that came out this week. And so there's a lot of fallout. Was Kevin McCarthy lying when he said that he didn't say that to the caucus? Yada, yada, yada. And so there's a lot of reporters trying to get the Republican congressman's reactions to the comments made by McCarthy and the fallout of this event. And so Glenn Grothman, Wisconsin's own, up from the sixth congressional district here in the state of Wisconsin. He pretty much came out today and said, Jesse, unless you're a member of the media, you don't give a damn about what happened on January 6th. And I find that pretty shocking.
Well, aren't you a member of the media?
I am. So I guess it's still a new role I'm taking on. Brian and I have only been doing this show for just over 6 months now. So I'm still relatively new to this whole role in the media, Jesse. I've always been kind of more behind the scenes, doing the activism, putting in the work, but never really having... This is the most outward-facing role that I've ever had, co-hosting this hour here on Devil Radio 92.7 and the Shaw 101 FM. And so I still... I'm having a hard time adjusting to that mindset, but I think that there are more Americans out there and Wisconsinites out there that care about the events of January 6th that aren't necessarily just working in the media. I don't think this is a construct of
the media.
Again,
he's talking to his base, though. I mean, it's all Republican office holders would like this to go away. They're done hearing about it. They want us to be done hearing about it. And they want their voters don't want to hear about it because it's shameful, right? I mean, here they are with their hand caught in the mousetraps that, you know, they're trying to overthrow the will of the voters.
Yeah.
Indisputable. Still. They lost, you know, 61 court cases. About a third of those court cases, the judge was appointed by Trump himself, not just Republicans, but by Trump. So it would be funny if it weren't so dangerous. And of course, they don't want to talk about it anymore. They want to move on with the rest of their lives. But no, you know. We can't let them walk out the door. We got to say, hey, elected representation as a concept of society is really, really important. And we really got to find out what happened.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. And it's silly to me. So I want to pose that question, though, to the listening audience. If you are not a member of the media, if you do care about the events of January 6th, give us a call, 844-967-2789, because I really do believe that there are more people than just the media out there. And I think it's lazy, I guess, for just the reporters to say, hey, that's the comment that Congressman Glenn Grothman made here about those events, and that's the fallout. Like, oh, why are we talking about Kevin McCarthy being on tape 18 months ago as saying that he was going to then approach the current president and tell him to resign because he was culpable for the events that unfolded on January 6th?
Look, if Kevin McCarthy is not smart enough to successfully pull off a Jedi mind trick, I would argue that neither is Glenn Grothman.
Fair enough. Fair enough. They all want to put it to bed, but I think that is the investigation that is important that's going on here. And I'm excited because, you know, these reporters, I forget the two individuals that are writing the book that all of these tapes are kind of surrounding on. It's kind of a publicity tour a little bit, Jesse, around the release of this book that's coming out. But they keep indicating that there's more tapes. There are more tapes coming.
There's always more
and
tapes.
And so I think it's going to be really interesting because I think the text messages that have come out from Mark Meadows, this tape of Kevin McCarthy, there's a lot of pretty damning evidence out there. And as it continues to trickle, the worst part is that it did happen in the front of us all. This unfolded in the public eye, and so everybody says, like, this is worse than Watergate, but the fact that it's happening out in the open is the reason why it doesn't seem worse. It's because we're all watching it. The right. crimes are unfolding in front of our very eyes.
And with the texts getting leaked, it's the and the tapes, it's these people's words that are damning them. It doesn't have to be us anymore, and that's why it's so relevant. But it looks like we got a couple of callers here.
Yeah, we got just a quick minute here before the next break, but we got Mark from the stack. Mark, what's on your mind today?
Well, I definitely care about it. I was doing a little research today, and it's actually the Electoral College had actually met in December and certified that Joe Biden had won the election. What was supposed to happen on January 6th was merely a ceremonial action that should have taken nothing, and the fact that they're directly trying to overthrow our democracy. They do not care about democracy. They subscribe to Ayn Rand, calling democracy an authoritarian system, and that it limits freedom. Well, they don't care about democracy. And Glenn Rothman, God, if the mind has a, he's got a trick mind.
Yeah, and some of his colleagues here, Mark, in the state of Wisconsin, we have Tom Tiffany and I believe Fitzgerald, both voted against it as well. But Mark, we're going into hard break. Folks, this is Dueling Tangents. We're going to be right back in the next segment with more. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Got my friend Jesse filling in for Brian this afternoon as we dive into some Wisconsin headlines and a little polling update for us as well, Jesse. We got the
numbers.
Yeah, some numbers.
Counting letters.
Promise we won't do math on the radio. We're just going to read off some of the math done by our friend Charles Franklin over at the Marquette University Law School. And we're going to dive into that. And if you want to hear a deep dive into all of the numbers, we're going to have Charles Franklin on the Devil's Advocates later this afternoon. So he will be on these airwaves in a matter of hours, going into the numbers from his most recent round of state polling going on here in the state of Wisconsin. And he'll be having that conversation with Crudy. So you'll want to make sure you stay tuned all afternoon long so that we can hear the deep dive into those numbers. But before we get into the Marquette polling that was released today, we're going to go to the lines. We got our friend Dick in Madison calling in. Dick, what's on your mind today?
Well, guys, maybe the question should be asked, you know, if you don't care, how about this one? Do you care about the country? And I bet you most people will say yes. And you know what else is polling real high right now? The support we're giving to Ukraine. So what does it take? Do you really need to get to a point where you're fighting like they are for your democracy before you care? I know, you know, it sounds kind of corny, I suppose, but, you know, that's what it's all about, what Mark just said.
Yeah, no.
Is that you're fighting for the very democracy here in this country, and if you don't have time for it, well, I guess you just don't have time for the country itself.
The heroic displays of individuals in Ukraine fighting for their country and fighting to keep their democracy and to remain independent are an excellent juxtaposition, Dick, from what's going on here in Wisconsin and the country as a whole. Because you're right, if you're trying to tell me as an elected official to U.S. Congress here for the state of Wisconsin that, oh, nobody cares about the events that unfolded on January 6th unless you're part of the media, it's the same argument that Republicans contrived when COVID hit. Everybody in the Republican Party tried to claim that COVID was just a media hoax designed to scare you. And now we have, what, almost a million Americans dead?
And I think part of it, too, is, you know, we need to continue this fight with the ballot and not the bullet, because That is our democracy. That, like, the founding fathers were not monolithic, and they didn't agree with each other on most things, but they could agree that the better way to hash things out was a free exchange of ideas and counting heads and seeing who agrees with those ideas the most. And granted, they needed to, you know, improve and expand the franchise a lot over the years, and we need to continue to do that. That work is not done, but the ballot over the bullet is the way to go here. Otherwise, that's what we're left with, right? We're left with law of the jungle.
Well, that was essentially what happened on January 6th, is that's sure. what the Republicans and the Trump supporters that attacked the Capitol were attempting to do that. That's what they
filed for political divorce, because they said at that point, we're not recognizing that we that you won fair and square. So now we're going to use force. And you know, bringing it back along to the first segment today, you know, we talk about inside traitors. It gives a new meaning to the word inside traitor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think
especially with some of these text messages that are coming out from Mark Meadows and others.
And I think right now the Democrats seem to be in this mode of, hey, just stand back and let them beat themselves up, when really you should be stomping on the gas pedal, making a million great ads and really just hammering these people on the traitors that they are.
Well,
boil it down for people.
That's my biggest problem, Jesse, with like the history will judge them. It's like we can't wait that long. Like, we need to judge them now for the crimes that they've committed and hold them accountable.
And when people say, well, I don't want to judge people, there's a mental divorce right there from you know, being judgmental and like feeling and looking down on somebody and not recognizing that we all make mistakes. And then there's the kind of judgment which is good and we should engage in, that says this type of behavior is bad and we should shun that behavior so that we don't repeat it or emulate it. And people who like to say, well, I don't like to get political. We're all political beings. We're all political creatures. We're pack animals. So I feel like saying, well, I don't want to judge them for that, or I don't want to be political, is just another way to avoid accountability. And none of us can be neutral on a moving train, right? This train of human events that goes down the railroads of history. Nobody is neutral on a moving train, to quote Howard Zinn. So you can either, you know, see the train's going off a cliff and you can reach up and pull that brake to try to ring the alarm bell, or you can do nothing and go off the cliff. But like Rush said, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Yeah, you're still making a choice at that point. And so I think that's enough about that for now, because we're gonna get back to it a little bit, but I want to go off on this side tangent, we'll call it, but a tangent down to
tangent of a tangent,
going into these Marquette University Law School polling numbers that got released this afternoon, Jesse, and we will get back to thoughts and Wisconsinites' opinions on what occurred on January 6th, because there's going to be pollster Charles Franklin asked the question about how people thought about decertifying the election results here in the state of Wisconsin. So that was one of the things. But we've got some crowded primaries going on as well. And so I want to give a little bit of the update for what Charles Franklin found as the results for where Wisconsinites are seeing these crowded primary fields and how they're favorables of them and where they're shaping up, because we're only a few months away now from the August 9th primary that's going to be taking place here in the state of Wisconsin. We've got a Republican gubernatorial primary that entered a new candidate this week. So some of this polling data for Republicans is actually going to be a little outdated now, because we've got a fourth candidate that has entered the field. But we also have got some polling around the Democratic primary, Jesse, for candidates for U.S. Senate going for the nomination to go up against current U.S. Senator Ron Johnson.
Late on me. Let's start with that Democratic field. What's that looking like?
Yeah, well, we got the plus or minus. This is a little bit of a large margin of error, Jesse. So I do want to let everybody know this was a kind of a smaller field. So the plus or minus percentage, 4.1 percentage points for the full sample. But out of then the specific primaries, there were 363 Dem primary voters with a margin of error of 6.6%, and 375 Republican primary voters for a margin of error of 5.6%. So still relatively small poll of Wisconsinites this far out from the primary.
It's not a crystal ball, but it's some tea leaves. Correct. To give us some idea.
It's tea leaves, but this is what Charles Franklin found over at the Marquette University Law School. Finds the U.S. Senate primary for Democrats is getting tighter, with 19% of likely Dem voters supporting current Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and 16% supporting Alex Lazary, the vice president of the Milwaukee Bucks, who is currently on leave right now. Rounding out the field, we got Sarah Godlewski, current state treasurer, at 7%, and Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson at 5% in the Dem Senate primary, with all other candidates at 1% or less. So a little bit of a tightening, because back in February, Barnes was at 23% and Lazary was at 13%. So they're 10 points apart now, 10 points apart back in February, just over 2 months ago, and now they're 3% apart. So pretty tightening of the poll, but still a lot of undecided, Jesse. Almost 50% of the Dem primary voters polled coming in undecided.
Yep, that tallies up around 57%. So, yep, 43. That's a large number of people. As my wife always says, it's anyone's game.
It is, but and the fact now that we're seeing it, it's been talked about as more or less of a four-person race. The four names that I named were kind of the four top tier. That was the top tier of where a lot of the candidates are. There's, I believe, total of almost a dozen candidates, all in all. So there's about eight that are either polling at 1% or less. And so to be expected, though, there's a lot of, none of them are above 20% in this most recent poll, Jesse.
Yeah, and I think it's even early to say that it's a four-person race. I mean, if you look at, like, for example, any other crowded primary, look at the 2020 Democratic primary for president. Before, you know, this, what are we, 3.5 months out before primary votes get mm-hmm. cast, when we were that far out ahead of the first votes in Iowa, the numbers were all over the place. No one thought that Biden had a chance for darn sure. Same thing on the Republican side. You know, a lot happens. You get like one or two main front runners in a cycle of that size before the electorate really settles down. So I think it's still pretty early to say anything.
Yeah, I think it's we're in a window here where I think after Memorial Day, there's going to be a pretty much a sprint. And I think a lot of those undecided voters in the Democratic primary are going to start making up their mind. They're going to be tuning in, seeing where the candidates are on the issues that they care about. And they're going to be making up their mind about who they want to support in the August 9th primary. But there's a lot of ground between now and then. So it's going to be interesting to see. There's a lot of undecided. There's a lot of time still left in this primary. But some interesting numbers. The fact that we've got a tightening, at least in the sample size that was polled by Marquette University Law School professor Charles Franklin, is I think a key indicator. It's shown us, and we've got about 2 months more now between now and the next round of data. So we're going to be getting more in June, and then that's going to be kind of, I think, the last statewide poll that that Charles Franklin's going to be doing for these primaries. So 2 months from now, in June, we're going to hear even more updated numbers, and I think it'll be interesting to kind of compare where Wisconsinites are now to where they are going to be 2 months from now. But folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Got my friend Jesse filling in for Brian this afternoon, taking your phone calls, 844-967-2789. We are discussing the Marquette University Law School polling that dropped this afternoon. Just recapping the Democratic primary poll, it was a tightening of the race between current Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and Vice President of the Milwaukee Bucks Association, Alex Lazary. The other big one, though, top of the ticket, Jesse, is the GOP primary. So the new poll finds that in the GOP primary for governor, Rebecca Clayfish is supported by 32%, Kevin Nicholson by 10%, Timothy Rantham by 4%, but the poll was conducted before Tim Michaels joined the race earlier this week. And so what do you think about that, Jesse? The fact that Rebecca Clayfish still getting a third of the polled primary voters is supporting her in that column, and that's a hefty margin to.
I don't think anyone's gonna out campaign Clayfish. I mean, I think that that the party apparatchiks had anointed her a long time ago. I'm surprised that Michaels is jumping in.
It's kind of late in the game for it.
It's not just late in the game, but he was working on Clayfish's campaign. So if you're going to read tea leaves here, that says good things to me because, you know, as a guy who has run a statewide race before, albeit with a little bit of a need to pat his ego on the back, which is, it seems like this candidacy is yet again. But he put up at least a moderately strong fight against, I mean, not moderately strong, against Feingold when he ran against him, if I recall correctly. And if he understands what a functional campaign office looks like. And if he was working in Clayfish's shop and thought he really, really needed to throw his hat in the ring, that says, yeah, maybe she doesn't have, maybe there's not a lot of there. So at least that's how I'm going to take it for now.
Yeah, I still find it fascinating that it became this crowded of a field, because Robin Voss was doing everything he could. He pretty much told Kevin Nicholson right before Kevin Nicholson announced, hey, stay out of this. You don't want to get into this. Yeah, I got Timothy Rantham, who is riding high on the coattails of, I don't know, Trump and the MyPillow executive. Like, I don't really know exactly how Timothy Rantham thinks that this is going to be.
Flynn maybe has got his back.
Maybe, but then that's the weird part as well, is you see Trump endorsements coming in some of these crowded Republican primaries. In the state of Ohio, J.D. Vance, author of the Hillbilly Elegy, Ohio native originally, I believe,
yes.
But also kind of back in Ohio running for that U.S. Senate seat. And he was second, third, fourth in a lot of the polls. And then last week, Donald Trump endorsed him.
Anointed him.
And now this past week in Ohio, it was the first time that J.D. Vance was all of a sudden leading in the Republican primary voters for the polls because of that Trump endorsement. So I think that's going to be the other interesting math here. Is we've got all of this polling now on the books for the Republican primary, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see when the former guy decides to weigh in, who he's going to choose and how that's going to affect the crowded field. So it's definitely still a big space to watch. There's a ton of undecided voters in that one as well. And we're going to be keeping an eye on it. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Got my friend Jesse filling in for Brian this afternoon. We got one more segment left in the day, but we're going to be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Got my friend Jesse filling in for Brian this afternoon. And Jesse, just one more note that I want to kick off about the Marquette University Law School. Yeah, just one more thing before, because there's going to be a deep dive, like I said. Charles Franklin going to be joining Crudy on the Devil's Advocates radio show later this afternoon. But Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, highest unapproval rating, I think, in recent polling. This is the highest numbers, and some of the analysis I was seeing real quick, because obviously this released in the same time that I was prepping for the show today, and so not a whole lot of time to get the analysis of all of the numbers, because it was a ton. Like, there was so much information coming out of this poll, and it's hard to catch it all. But one of the analysis that was being done was between 2015 and now, comparing his last reelection campaign to where he is now. Senator Ron Johnson is farther below water than he had ever been in that 2015-2016 reelection cycle. And so he did delay announcing his run for re-election this year. It was a little bit of a late for him to make that decision. He was kind of saying, hey, I'll take my time, and I'm not going to let anybody else know once I make up my mind. But he's underwater in this most recent Marquette University Law School polling, with some of the highest disapproval ratings that Senator Ron Johnson has had in quite some time. And so you'll be able to hear all about that on the Devil's Advocates this afternoon, with Crudy being joined by Charles Franklin. But one of the other Wisconsin headlines that I want to dive into, Jesse, because we've got some other news going on here in the state of Wisconsin over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, because a lot of different environmental things going on in the state. You know, we still got a squatter on the Natural Resources Board. Fred Prenn has refused to resign, even though his term ended at the beginning of May of last year. So we're approaching a full year on that overstayed welcome.
I thought that went to court. Isn't that in court somewhere?
It's in court somewhere, but he's still sitting there. But this is the headline. Kewaunee County Factory Farm sues the DNR over new permit that limits animals and orders water monitoring. So, Jesse,
those regulations were local regulations, by the way. So Republicans and their benefactors only care about local control until they don't.
They're local regulations that were upheld by the current conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court last summer.
Yes.
This was something that the Wisconsin DNR wanted to do, and it went through the courts, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court gave the DNR this authority to further regulate water quality through these through the permitting process. And now this Kewaunee farm, Kinnard Farms, up in Kewaunee County, is saying, well, no, it's unreasonable. An 8,000 cow limit is unreasonable. You can't let us have more than that. That is unreasonable. And they are being told, in order to qualify for this permit by May, they have to update their water, groundwater testing equipment.
Ah, yes. 8,000 head of cattle. That's just like our great-grandparents had on their dairy farms. My great-grandpa would wake up at 2:30 in the morning every day and start milking all 8,000 of his cows.
All 8,000 every morning, just ran through.
Well, they had 20 children, so that's,
I think you'd need even more than 20 kids. You'd need quite a few kids to be able to milk all of those cows, Jesse. But it's absolutely just insane. And guess what law firm is representing this farm in this lawsuit against the DNR?
Michael Best and Friedrich?
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. Well, hey.
That really was a stab in the dark. But
it was a 50-50 guess, though. It was either them or the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty.
That's where I would have gone next.
I was going to say, that's essentially the two. And between those two, you can usually guess every single time. But nice job getting it out on the first shot. But yeah, they are the ones representing this lawsuit.
I legitimately did not know, by the way. It was a guess.
I had a feeling, because you don't do the homework before when we say we're going to talk about this article. You don't look at it. But Jesse, up in that neck of the woods, I mean, the fact that this is one of the largest contained animal feeding operations, or contained or concentrated? Concentrated animal feeding operations, CAFOs. The fact that the residents in Kewaunee County want this to be able to be regulated because there are private drinking wells in that county that are being contaminated by the waste that is produced by having 8,000 cows on one farm.
When I was young, Wisconsin was primarily known, and I mean when young, like when I was like 8 or 10 years old, you know, you're only so aware of the world and its problems at that age. But I do remember it being instilled upon me that Wisconsin was known primarily for three things besides beer and cheese, and that was transparent governance, strong public education, and clean rivers and lakes in our waterways.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they're really going for the trifecta of dismantling all of that. But I can't imagine why anybody would want to spoil their waterways over the name of maybe some slightly cheaper milk or some slightly cheaper beef.
Profiteering. Right. That's essentially what it boils down to.
I mean the laity. I mean the consumer. Like, if you get down to brass tacks, look, I came
well,
here
there's a quote here from the piece over the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, so I want to share this. So residents in the area are disagreeing with Kinnard's Farm on this lawsuit. And this quote, why they think they can continue to drag out a Supreme Court decision and a scientifically founded permit terms is incomprehensible, said Kewaunee County resident Jody Perrins. Quote, this further proves they have no real interest in regenerative farming, just regenerative profiteering. Because that's what it comes down to, is they're claiming that they're doing all the right things, Jesse. They're saying that they're trying to do the correct farming methods to be able to be regenerative farming.
I think they're lying. I think it's the word for that.
Yeah.
Sure. And you know, it's regenerative farming. So farming, as it's done, these large corporate agribusinesses, it's incredibly carbon intensive too, right? It releases all kinds of carbon into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It pollutes our air and our rivers and lakes, our drinking water. It makes the air unfit to breathe and the water unfit to drink. And you know, economically, it spoils all of us too, and it spoils our politics with these massive donations and campaign contributions. And lo and behold, I remember a candidate. She had some kind of a plan. What was her name? She had a plan to take agriculture and return it to family farming and using stewardship funds. name, name loses me.
We come full circle here. Just look down, Jesse. It's on your shirt.
Oh, yes.
There it
is. Warren had a plan for that, too. She wanted to expand the conservation stewardship program, which is where a lot of these small family farms go for resources to learn how to become more sustainable and eventually get off of carbon and not pollute waterways at all. It's doable. It's done. It's done today.
It's yeah, it's being done today, but not up in Kewaunee County, not on the Kinnard's farm. And nope. So it'll be interesting to see how this lawsuit unfolds because it's already been settled. So I'm hoping this is going to be a quick decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but we're going to have to wait and see.
I hope they all realize what party to vote for and fall will make that stick.
Yeah. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. My friend Brian out this afternoon, but we got Jesse filling in for him. If you miss any portion of the show, go check out the podcast, devilradio927.com. Click on the podcast tab, but I'll be back tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then. Oh, yeah.